Wednesday, July the 4th, covered the full range of emotions. It began with happiness. Lennon and I had our coffee and juice together in his room a little past 9, and then I dressed for church while talking to Linda. It turned out so happily about her, the way she feels about being the proxy godmother of Lucy's baby. The Gerard Nugents are the real godparents. It's necessary that they be Catholic. But since she'd had a baby just 2 days after Lucy, they couldn't come for the ceremony, and Lucy very much wanted Linda to hold Patrick Lyndon and act as proxy godmother. Not only did she not feel slighted, she was delighted to. And yes, it would be perfectly all right to have Joe as honorary godfather. So it worked out to the happiness of everyone. Lucy wore her pink going-away dress and a pink headband, and Patrick Lyndon wore the same dress that Lucy and Linda Bird had worn. It had been made by Mrs. Johnson. And the sweet ladies of the so-and-so circle of Montgomery, Alabama, had taken the petticoat of Mrs. Johnson's christening dress and had embroidered on it Lucy's name and birth date and Patrick Lyndon's. And one of her favorite nuns in the hospital had made an adorable cap for the baby. And two more elderly ladies from Wetumpka, Alabama, who had been friends of my Aunt Effie's, had crocheted some darling booties. Linda and I and Lucy and Pat took our places in the church. And then Linda and Joe came, with Patrick Lyndon very good in Linda's arms. It was a very small gathering indeed. Roy Lynn and Mary Love and Billy Bailey, and Earl and Wheezy Deeth were the only others there. Father Kiefer performed the ceremony. Photographers were there in full fold, and for once, everybody was all smiles. Patrick Lyndon behaved like an angel through a rather long ceremony until at the very end, Father Kiefer poured a very sizable flask of water right on his head, at which he cried out mildly. And then we all stood in front of little Francis Xavier Church for all the pictures they wanted to take. And then Linda continued to keep Patrick Lyndon and drove him home the long way around. She's really awfully good with him and quite in love with him. The Baileys and the Deeths came for lunch. And of course Joe, and there was much talk of when I would go to Paladura. What a simple ceremony, this baptism, in comparison to the elaborate wedding of last August 6th. About 2:30, with Jake Pickle, we left in the Jet Star for the funeral of Merle Patman in Texarkana. I took along a big stack of mail and signed it, making Ashton its custodian, and we talked with Jake about the possible trip to Round Top on Friday. I wanted Lyndon to understand and approve of it. Jake is a good salesman. Just this morning, Lyndon had said, "Would you like to fly on over to Karnak?" I eagerly would. But the logistics, how? He figured out that a helicopter could meet us. I got Ashton to call Doris and Ruth. Ashton got the dividend of going along for an hour or two visit with her folks in Shreveport. We reached Texarkana a little past 3. We had told no one except Wright Patman and him just this morning that we were coming. Nevertheless, the word gets around by osmosis, and there was a small crowd at the airport. We smiled gravely and rode to Wright Patman's home. Lyndon had brought along several bushels of peaches. One he took to the Patman house, which I remembered from campaign stops. Could it be as far back as 1941? I think so. All the family were assembled there, their 3 sons and numerous grandchildren, relatives and friends. We had the quick ritual of a cup of coffee. Food was spread on the dining room table, as is the custom in the South at the time of a funeral. Wright had greeted us at the steps, emotional, almost with tears in his eyes, thanking us for coming. And Lyndon said, quite simply, "I couldn't be anywhere else today." Wright used to serve in the legislature with Lyndon's father, and he has been our close friend since 1937 when we went to Congress, where he was already an established and powerful member. Bone of the bone of East Texas, he has served it very shrewdly and well for close to 40 years, retaining something of the country boy touch, but quite capable of matching wits with anybody he meets in the Capitol. And the current crop of youngsters are always present in his office in the summer times. Unlike some politicians, he keeps up his ties with the folks at home assiduously. He drove to the First Baptist Church and sat inconspicuously in a middle pew. I do not think many of the people knew that we were there. I saw a few familiar faces, the J.Q. Mahaffey's, the John Simmons, and suddenly, very warmly, Gordon Fulcher, whom we've known for 30 years. The ceremony was sweet, personal, and full of eulogy. Not just the cool reading of verses from the Bible, but a warm description of the life of Merle Patman, to whom he was saying goodbye. As we found our way to the car, Jake Pickle beside us, I commented on it, and Lyndon said he thought so too, and then went on to say, quite positively, I'll tell you what I want my funeral to be like. I want somebody who's a close friend, who can speak real well, to talk for about 10 minutes, and then I want a real pretty song, somebody like Anita Bryant, and I want it air-conditioned. Right there with all the mourners pouring out of the church, I had trouble restraining a laughing fit. In the crowd, we got a sight of Gordon Fulcher's face. Lyndon sent for him at once. He has the quickest reactions. He drove with us, and we caught up on the last few years and what had happened to him. He was the editor of a small-town newspaper in Atlanta. He called Lyndon, Lyndon, with such ease that I'm sure he was quite unconscious of it. Everybody else calls him Mr. President. To my delight, he expressed an awareness and an interest in our conservation beautification program. I told him it would just depend on the folks back home like him, and to back it with editorials and action. Someone in the crowd had come up to me and had told me about their plantings of Bradford pear trees here in the residential streets of Texarkana. The ceremony at the cemetery was very brief. We said our goodbyes once again to all the Patmans and embraced Wright, and then got in the helicopter which had parked nearby. Goodbye at last to Gordon, and we were airborne a Karnak with a press pool, Bob Young and Sid Davis and Frank Cormier, Mike Posner and Jack Horner. As we looked down over the terrain, I could not help but notice the change in my short lifetime. What used to be 40 acres and a mule country, stretches and stretches of cotton fields with some corn here and there, and many small cabins, was now heavily wooded. The new ground, cleared with such back-breaking labor, had served the farmer for only a lifetime or two. Now the woods were coming back. Pine and cattle must, I think, be their chief industry. It was just a 30-minute flight. I found the newsmen very eager and interested. They wanted to know all about the brick house, our courtship days. Everybody felt in an expansive mood, I think. The country was very fresh and green, a startling comparison to the hill country. And apparently there had been a rain, hours or even minutes before. There were pools of water and leaves were still wet. The sky was dark with clouds. The helicopter settled down onto Doris's front lawn, and there they were waiting to greet us, Doris and Hugh, their son-in-law Dudley Taylor, and their little grandson, Dudley, Edward Odoms III with their three children, and Velma. We got out, and there was much hugging and kissing and introducing, and then we went inside. We brought along our photographer, and Lyndon had very thoughtfully asked for a package of gifts for Doris's new grandson, born just 3 days before. Diane is still in the hospital with him, and she had been keeping little Dudley. Lyndon had a medallion for him and an autographed picture, several little items, and also a medallion for Doris and Hugh and something for Velma. He loves doing this. The White House photographer went with us everywhere, and I hope got some good pictures. Doris had coffee and snacks and cookies put out and insisted on inviting the newspaper men in, which they seemed to appreciate very much. The house is full of pictures of us, covering many years. Such a comfortable, pleasant house, and such a triumph for her to have made so much of her life in the restricted surroundings of Karnak. We had a little visit, and then Doris piled in the car with us. We drove down to see the historical marker and the little plot at the crossroads where the Citizens Improvement Committee of Karnak has put in grass and shrubs and flowers, and I was really very pleasantly surprised. I saw the site of the new post office, to which I hope to return in October, perhaps, or in the spring planting season, and make a gift of some shrubbery. It's a very small plot, but I think a dogwood and some easy maintenance shrubbery might give it a little distinction and charm. And then we rode through the Cattle State Park, which on July the 4th was full of people, children swinging, families sitting at picnic tables, men pulling their boats in out of the water, down at the Caddo Landing, where the big steamboats used to come up 70 years ago or so. Nobody knew who we were, a fact that seemed to amaze the newspaper people. And then we rode on out to the brick house. Ruth was most eagerly delighted to see us and greeted us so warmly. Lyndon gave her a little charm. I was grateful that he did. And then she took us through the downstairs to show us how she had done it over, and I was hard-pressed to say anything because the drapes and the furniture have no relevance to the old character of the house. As we walked, I saw very few reminders of my mother's day. The two oak rocking chairs that I have seen my daddy rocking in by the fire for at least a half a century. How I would love to have one of them. And two ornately carved black chests. They look rather like teak. Their period or style are really unknown to me, and they're dear only because I remember them from the earliest days of my life. And there on the mantel were two familiar vases, brightly flowered, that always stood on the living room mantel in Mother's time. Otherwise, everything was new. We went upstairs, and the view from the balconies, the front one on the west and the long one on the east, is still breathtaking. One sad thing, the catalpa tree at the front yard is quite dead, a gray ghost. The first thing that anyone should do with that house is planting of lifetime trees in the front yard. Several of the old cedar trees are no more than storm-riddled trunks. But the crepe myrtles were still beautiful. Tall trees, not shrubs, and pink with flowers. In fact, from the outside, I was still proud of the old brick house as the newspaper men faced it. There were some there who wanted to take pictures. We stood for them. But upstairs, when we found some of the old bookcases, they were quite empty. I asked Ruth where the books were. She said she thought they were stored in the top shelves of the cupboard in the bathroom. I casually mentioned that if she didn't want them anymore, I would like to pick up some of them. She said she'd be glad for me to. And she kept on repeating over and over that she wished I would come back and stay some. It was a little past 7 when we left from Doris's on the chopper, waving goodbye to everybody, and I put my hand on Lyndon's knee and said, "Thanks, dear." It had been an amazing day, all the way from the baptism of our first child to the funeral of an old friend of 30 years, back to the scene where Lyndon first courted me in the late summer of 34. We picked up Ashton in an hilariously funny scene at the Shreveport Airport, where she and her family emerged from the little lounge, the men with their pants rolled up and some with their shoes off in their hands, the women stepping gingerly through deep pools of water, the sky still black from a flash flood that had taken place during the last 2 hours. Ashton had never been able to get out of the airport. Fortunately, her family had arrived before the storm broke, so they'd had a 2-hour visit with water up to their ankles inside the lounge at the airport. One of my feelings as I flew back was of amazement that after nearly 40 years in Congress, the only members there at his wife's funeral were Bob Pogue and Francis, and Jake Pickle, who had gone with us, and Lyndon, who had served with him for 24 years. No senator or governor or other officials. A great church full of friends and relatives. As soon as we got to the ranch, we left in a helicopter for the West Ranch. I think a package of 8 we were, the Johnsons and the Nugents and 4 of the staff. And with the Hills and the Morrisons and the West, that made a happy crowd, a pleasant evening out by the pool, and at that dinner table that is always laden with the best and most plentiful food. It was midnight before we went back to the ranch. I signed some mail while getting a rub and went to sleep close to 1.